Welcome to What in God's Name. He's Chris Owen.
And she is Shayna Appel.
And you've tuned in for about 20 minutes of brain teasing during this pandemic time. We hope to keep our community together. So we're just reaching out to our listeners to say, hey, hope you all are well and good out there. And here we are, and on we go.
We're doing current events and culture from a theological and philosophical point of view. And today we will be adding pastoral words, words of encouragement and peace.
And a reminder for our listeners, we are in the midst of our fund drive. If that's something you can help us out with, we'd certainly appreciate it.
We have a $1,000 matching grant. And Shayna, I'm happy to report we're halfway there. And so we thank you, our listeners and supporters. Our matching grant means that whatever you pledge to What in God's Name is doubled. To make it easy for you to donate, you can simply go to our website, whatingods.com, WHATINGODS, and there are buttons there on the landing page for you to donate.
So this morning, as we're podcasting out to you all, Chris and I are with you all amidst this pandemic that is breaking out worldwide. I don't know, Chris, what... It's been a little nuts, yeah?
It's been a little nuts. So I had the opportunity to do a brief five-minute pastoral message from What in God's Name. Unfortunately, you weren't able to join me for that. So 2 days ago, there's a five-minute show where I mentioned three things that might be helpful in the face of anxiety. And Shayna, I would love to hear some of your reflections, some of your theological and pastoral reflections on going through life in an age where people are feeling on edge.
Yeah, I think anxiety is the big one. And I'm reminded of something I read once upon a time, and I believe it was John Crossan, who said that the opposite of faithfulness is not faithlessness, it's anxiety. And I remember when I read that, it was like, oh, guilty as charged, you know? And here I am, an ordained minister, and I suffer from anxiety all the time. And if you're a person who deals with anxiety on any sort of regular basis, then certainly circumstances right now are pushing folks right over the hairy edge. That having been said, you know, I'm also reminded of what my Buddhist friends say so often, which is pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional.
And what is the difference in that, to your mind?
It's a good question, Chris. It's the notion that pain is going to come into everybody's life. It's what we do with the pain that distinguishes it, that will either turn it into suffering or not. And of course, you know, in the realm of Buddhism, this idea of staying unattached is one way, you know, letting what is happening happen without attaching a whole lot of meaning to it, and which is very difficult for human beings to do, right? Because we're meaning-making machines. I mean, we abhor a void of meaning, and if we hit that vacuum, we will add meaning. And I think most people have a really hard time wrapping their brain around the notion that we can choose the meaning we attribute to something. So, yeah, because it's about taking a certain amount of responsibility. The other thing, you and I talked about this briefly before we turned on the equipment here this morning. I think this period of time is really going to test people's faith. For those of us who have either at some point in their lives been confronted with a diagnosis that could potentially be terminal, as our regular listeners know that happened to me just last spring, or people who have had near-death experiences, come to some peace or not, come to the realization that, you know, we're really not so much in control. This whole control thing is a lovely illusion, but, you know, it in one split second, like your life can be totally upended. And it's like at that moment where you have to come face to face with this idea that, you know, apparently I never really was in charge in the first place. And that, having dealt with that cancer, you know, in the realm of the cancer diagnosis last spring, has definitely changed my outlook. And I noticed that, you know, again, I'm a person who deals with a fair amount of anxiety most of the time. And I noticed that I'm not having as much anxiety around this pandemic as a lot of people are, in large part because it, for me right now, it's like, okay, this is what's next. And none of us knows how it's going to turn out. You know, let's talk in a week, my anxiety level maybe ramped up again. But, you know, I went to the store and it was a zoo and I just turned around in the parking lot and left. I mean, I had stocked up 2 weeks ago, so, you know, there wasn't really anything I needed. I actually just wanted some balsamic vinaigrette. But I waited until the crowds, you know, diminished. And then I went to the store and just took a walk through. And it was wild because, you know, in America, in this day and age, we're not used to seeing bare shelves. There was an older woman who said to somebody I know the other day, because I heard the story reflected to me, that this older woman turned to someone and said, this reminds me of what it looked like during World War II. So, you know, so we've been through this before, but like the paper aisles. Chris, what is up with the, please somebody help me understand what is up with the rush on toilet paper of all things?
I do have a toilet paper take, but I wanted to circle back. Before I get to my toilet paper take, I wanted to talk a little bit about this relationship between faith and anxiety, which you started with. And I tell people that faith does not make us immune to anxiety. So it's a slightly different perspective than this quotation that you started with, that the opposite of faith is not faithlessness, but anxiety. Here's what I think. To have anxiety, to have fear, is part of our basic human experience. So just because we are people of faith doesn't mean that we don't have fear or anxiety. What I think our faith does give us is a pathway back to ground.
I like that. Yeah,
so we don't beat ourselves up.
And we don't have to stay there.
Oh, and we don't have to stay there, and we don't have to beat ourselves up. Oh, I don't have enough faith. I'm feeling anxious, therefore what's wrong with my faith?
Right.
I think that's a trap.
Well, you can blame John Crossan for that. Yeah, no, I think then we might say that in faith, we get to have anxiety without having anxiety have us.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, yeah, we all have all of these emotions, but we know where we're at and we can find a way back. I like that. I like that better.
We can have fear, but we don't have to be fearful.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's so profound. It's sort of like our faith right now is entering X Games. You know, it's like we're going to do extreme faith here because so the world as we know it has just radically changed in a very short period of time, which can be very, very, very anxiety provoking. But you know, God never promised us that wouldn't happen. The scripture never says, do this, this, and this, and you know, you'll escape the trials of life. The only thing the scripture promises, the only thing God promises us in scripture, is that God will be with us. For our friends out there, God be with you. And I recommend taking time each day, morning and night, if you can squirrel away that kind of time, to be really intentional about sitting down, getting quiet, light a candle, do something that's soothing and calming, and just try to become aware of that presence of God within you and out there in the world, and then engage in some prayer, you know, for yourself and for the world. And let's see if we can't get through this.
Good words. And before I get to my toilet paper take, I think a word to our listeners who are not believers in God, the general teaching, I think, would be the same, which is connect. Stay connected to that which feeds you life. So could be other people, to nature, all of those things that connect us and make us less isolated. I think that's the teaching.
Connecting is certainly a part of it, but I would also encourage our friends who don't identify as being of a part of any particular faith that they take that quiet time and use it as an opportunity to check into that still small voice within, because that is going to be the place where anxiety dwells. And that's the place that's going to need some comforting, right?
Absolutely. And I so appreciate your, because of your Unitarian sensibilities and training, you are much better at using the language, right. The broader language, right. Than I am.
We live in a, I always thought,
even though I didn't grow up as a Christian, I've just kind of landed in that language. It's hard for me to find the other language, but I appreciate that you can.
We think of the UCC, the UCC is a huge tent. The UUA is almost a tent without limits. So while I find that anxiety provoking on a good day.
All right, here's my toilet paper take.
Toilet paper take.
I have three thoughts about why there was a run on toilet paper.
And I wish our listeners could see what's happening here. Chris has actually taken notes on a piece of wood, which I'm going to, let me see if I can go into my magic ball and say, these ideas came to Chris while he was boiling syrup. And so he grabbed a piece of wood off the pile and wrote his notes on. How'd I do? Am I close?
No, I just keep this piece of wood on the front porch in case I need to write something down.
Okay. Very funny. Chris's toilet paper, take one.
Take one. I think the first reason there was a run on toilet paper is that people saw that toilet paper was going, and so they were like, okay, I better get some toilet paper before it's all gone. So that's the idea that fear becomes contagious, this kind of self-reinforcing notion of, oh, there's a shortage. Oh, I'm afraid that I'm not going to get some, so I better get some. This is the simplest of the three reasons. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it was the beginning of it. It's kind of what fed it as time went on.
Well, and so that's not limited just to toilet paper.
Correct. That's right. Yes.
Because the shelves just cleaned out. Canned goods, pasta, beans.
Second reason, and again, you could extrapolate this beyond toilet paper. My third reason will get specifically to toilet paper, but this second reason also you can extrapolate to others. If I feel out of control, I'll do something to give me at least the illusion of being in control. So again, you could extrapolate this to other goods as well, but this feeling of anxiety that we've talked about, and you've already mentioned this, leads to people feeling, oh, I'm out of control. I don't know where I'm going to get my bearings. I don't know how I'm going to settle myself. So I'm going to do something.
It's out of control.
Yeah. Right.
Like it, even outside of myself, is out of control, clearly.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Which feeds that the personal sense. Of,
absolutely. Yeah.
Third reason, this run on toilet paper touches a substratum of a basic human way of classifying the world between the clean and the unclean. And in a time of contagion and disease, clean becomes paramount and supreme. We go for cleanliness. And toilet paper is about being clean. And so this run on toilet paper, I think, is it's a non-rational connection, but it is this connection to cleanliness. We have to maintain cleanliness in order to stay well and to stay connected with life. In many religions, there's a deep understanding of this separating of the clean from the unclean. We have ritual purity kind of ritual purity practices.
Uh-huh.
And this is a kind of secular, non-religious purity practice, stocking up on toilet paper.
That's absolutely fascinating. And Chris, only you could have gone there. Absolutely remarkable. So, yeah, I mean, and ergo the run on cleaning supplies, and which I have to say, you know, it, going to your third point, I had that stuff in my, like, I didn't need to go out and buy that stuff. I have, you know, I mean, I generally, I guess, keep my house reasonably clean. But I mean, I think if I am hopeful about anything in the midst of this, Chris, it is that I believe fundamentally in the goodness of people, and we see it every time there's a crisis, you know, be it the Cajun Navy that shows up to flooded communities and just starts evacuating people, or, you know, after 9/11, the lines at the hospital, people waiting to donate blood. And I think that once the madness settles, that people are going to go into those pantries and look at their shelves, you know, sagging under the burden of all those canned goods. And you know, my hope is decide that there's a few of those things they can do without. And let's remember the least of these, whose lives are out of control, out of their control, on the best of days, and these are not the best of days, that people will relieve some of their own anxiety by taking on the well-being of others. Because that's the best way I know to get out of that difficult place is start looking beyond yourself to how you can be of service to others. Obviously, that's going to be a little challenging in this time where contact has to be minimized. But I mean, there are ways we can do it. You can drop off a box of goods, you know, at your local pantry and, you know, let them know you're out front and have, you know, someone come out and get the box out of your trunk or whatever. So I just want to encourage our listeners to look for those opportunities to care for others, look out for your neighbors, look out for your loved ones, et cetera. Maybe we'll come out of this better. You know, I was thinking about the interview you did with Mark Heim, and I was thinking, ooh, are we about to have a swing from that tit for tat, small place of being to a place of more open hearts, more generosity of spirit?
One of the things that I wanted to follow up with the clean versus unclean is that it's not a value judgment. I think it's part of human nature to have this way of categorizing reality, categorizing our experience. I would recommend that our listeners pay attention to the ways that we do that in society. There is a danger when we start categorizing others as the unclean. Sometimes you have the phrase, you know, the great unwashed. I've heard some people use that phrase. It's kind of, you know, those dirty ones there.
We've seen it in our lifetime with the AIDS pandemic.
Yes. And another way to, you know, those dirty foreigners is another way that we can use these categories of clean and unclean to separate people. And Jesus had a whole new way of teaching about what is clean and unclean. And I'm thinking of the scripture where he says, you know, what?
It's not what I put into my body that is unclean that I have to worry about. So obviously referring to kosher law, and it's not about what I put into my body that concerns God. It's what comes out of it vis-a-vis my actions, my speech.
Yeah.
Again, returning to our boot, right action, right speech, right mindful, you know, right-mindedness.
Yes. I just think of Jesus as a teacher of a new way to understand what is clean and what is unclean.
But and I think also in the foot washing, you know, in washing the feet of the disciples who, you know, that would have been considered, well, first of all, the disciples themselves would not have been, you know, in the owning class or the ruling class. You know, they were people taken from the margins, and the foot washing thing would have been a task normally assigned to a servant in the household, and Jesus picks it up and does it. So I'm not recommending people go out and do that right now during this pandemic. That might not be smart, but I think your words call us to be really acutely aware of how that manifests during this time so that we don't allow it to manifest in unconscious ways, which could be harmful.
What's the takeaway today? What would we like to leave for our listeners? I think the teachings on anxiety will continue to be important as we go forward. One other thing that I thought of in terms of pastoral words is an analogy for when I'm climbing a mountain, when I'm out hiking and I climb a mountain, and I do this little mind game with myself, which is, the top is always further away than I think. So I'm not constantly going, when is this going to end? When is this going to end? When is this going to end? But rather to focus my mind on this next step, this next step, this next step. The way my mind works is that I can compartmentalize that way pretty easily, but I find it tremendously helpful. And so I think we're in for a long walk, and let's just take one step at a time is, I think, the teaching.
Yeah, settle down and be where we are without trying to put too much emphasis on a future we know nothing about. I think that's wise. That's sage wisdom. I just keep coming back to that passage in John when Jesus is alleged to have said to his disciples, do not let your hearts be troubled and do not let them be afraid. And, you know, I often think about stuff that Jesus says. Yeah, well, that's easy for him to say. Except, you know, given where that allegedly happened in the arc of the whole story, Jesus was at that point relatively sure that the Roman army was out to the Roman government was out to take him out, that his time on this earth was coming to an end. And what he was saying to, you know, his followers is, you know, in my Father's house, there are many rooms. If I didn't believe that, you know, I wouldn't go before you to make room for you. So, you know, he was very clearly saying to his followers not to be afraid, not only of anything in this world, but also not to fear what comes next, that there's an order to it, and that whatever happens in this time, we're going to be okay.
Thank you, Shana.
You're welcome, Chris. Thank you. And thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in. We're certainly committed to being back with you next week. If, you know, if we're able to do that, we'll be podcasting throughout the pandemic if we're able to do that.
And no matter what, Shana, be curious.
Go deep.
And shine light. We'll see you next week.
See you next week, Chris.